Good.
Okay. All right, we're going to go ahead. I don't know where Mike is, so he's, I'm sure he's on his way. Next item on the agenda is the organizational part of the meeting, the approval of the agenda and consent items. Is there anybody like to put anything on consent?
Can we add 8, 11, and 12? The Cortez Renaming Committee, 8. 11 is the Resolution Day of the Teacher, and 12 is Resolution Classified.
Why in all of those, except sometimes they tell us we can't put resolutions on consent?
You can.
Okay.
But the Williams report, oh, that's an information report.
No, I said 8, 11, and 12. Oh,
okay. And 8? Okay.
And 8 was just the list of members.
List
right.
Of names. Okay. All right. And anything removed off of consent? Good. Is there a motion for this item, please? This will be to add 8 and 8, 11, and 12.
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Any objections? Motion is so ordered. Item number 4, the Edgewood reconfiguration item. Mrs. Kaplan.
Thank you. I think February 24th it was, we came to the Board of Education to talk about a recommendation from the School Configuration Committee. That committee has met since October on a monthly basis, and although our original goal was to review, revise, and make recommendations for all district programs and school configurations, we really focused on Edgewood because that was the priority at this time. As we look at Edgewood High School becoming a 9-12 school, it has put new responsibilities on the administration, and we really wanted to take a look to see if that model of one principal over two schools was still a viable option. At the meeting on the 24th, we reviewed with you several options that we had looked at. One was keeping Edgewood High School, Middle School status quo with no changes. One was looking at two schools and two principals. One was looking at one school, one principal, 7-12 configuration, and one was looking at one school, one principal, 6-12 configuration. This was a big task for the committee. We had parents, we had teachers, we had administrators, and tried to have stakeholders represented from other schools as well as Edgewood, because any change that we might make would affect other schools as well. And so before we could come up with any recommendation to the Board of Education, we felt like we had to have a list of criteria, and you can put them all on because I'm going to just review them. Thank you for doing that. Criteria to help us really look at our thinking and make a recommendation. And, of course, the first one that's most important, always the most important when we're trying to make a recommendation for any changes, would be the effect it would have on student achievement. Very important to our parents who were on the committee was to continue having choice and flexibility. That something that's really valued by our parent community is the fact that you can make choices for your child in fifth grade, whether they stay at an elementary school or they go to a middle school. And they liked having that choice because parents on the committee thought that their own children had different needs and that we'd make different choices for different children in their family. The other issue for parents from other schools was, although they recognized we need to look at some kind of change for Edgewood Middle School, High School, they wanted it to minimize the disruption it would have to their own children in their own schools. And our middle school parents and teachers felt that we also wanted to continue thinking about the needs of our middle school students and minimizes the changes for those students as well. One of the things that we all wanted to look for in any kind of change would be more flexibility and options for children, and a continuity of curriculum instruction, especially when we're looking at the Common Core and the demands it's bringing to kids. And then lastly, but just as importantly, was efficiency, that we felt there was a lot of duplication of chores and responsibilities of our administrators, and the duplication in the time going into the duplication was really taking away from being involved in the curriculum instruction of the school, and we wanted to see if we could eliminate that duplication. So I just want to quickly review what these options were and why we, what our decision was on these options. So when we talked about status quo, we really felt that this option was no longer supportive of doing what we needed to do in both schools. And the majority for this reason was the duplication of responsibilities, and that the duplication really limits the time that a principal is able to dedicate him or herself, in this case himself, to curriculum and instruction. So our first decision was we've got to do some change. We're not sure what, but we need to look at this with a change in mind. The next option we looked at was two principals in two schools. And many of us have had experience. I know as a superintendent, when you have a small campus and you have competing needs of faculty and students and you have two separate principals overseeing that, sometimes it causes conflict and it's hard to prioritize the decisions that you need to make for facilities. And we felt because Edgewood is one campus that having two separate principals on that one campus was not a viable option for our committee. The next thing that we looked at and kind of focused most of our time and research on was looking at one school, 712 configuration or a 612 configuration. And when we looked at the 712 configuration, again, in any one of these configurations, we were really thinking about an anticipated enrollment of 1,500 students. By going to a 712 configuration, we would need Orangewood and their fifth graders to remain there as sixth graders and Cameron's fifth graders to remain as sixth graders, which would cause us to have to put portables, three portables on each of those campuses, and it would be a cost of about $600,000. Our concern for Orangewood is of all of our schools, it's got the most limited amount of field space, and putting any more portables on Orangewood really limits the space of the facility, and we didn't really feel good about that. We felt it was a good option to have one schedule, except for lunch and recess, because we felt one of the major issues with the two schools and the ability to do vertical and horizontal collaboration with teachers and the ability to have teachers teach in both schools was that we have two separate schedules, and you can't coordinate when you have two separate schedules. We also felt by doing a 712 with either a 712 or a 612, it gives us the opportunity to look at IB middle years, and we thought that was a plus, and that there would be more course opportunities for enrichment and intervention, and more time for horizontal planning and vertical planning with our teachers, and that there would be common PD time, and there would be common faculty meeting time, more time to really share staff. And that there would be an ownership for the kids, whether it was 612 or 712, it would be under one umbrella, and all teachers would have ownership for the same kids. Again, in this particular option, we thought the portables was a hindrance to this. And even bigger than that, that if we went with a 712 configuration, that the philosophy of the district would have to be that you start at 7th grade and you graduate at 12th grade. That the only way that that option would work is that it is one school and that there would be the anticipation of graduating there. And we felt that we're not really sure right now in terms of where our district is that kids in 6th grade are able to make that decision of where they want to go to high school, because many of the kids who go to Edgewood Middle School still opt out to go to West Covina High School. And that we do have about 50% of the kids coming either from San Jose or outside of the district, and that might limit the kids that could come in. We felt that this option for right now would be the biggest disruption to other schools because it would change the grade configurations in several of our other schools. There was a cost, and from the parents' point of view, the lack of flexibility in terms of choice. We did feel this really supports student achievement and provides flexibility for course options and creates that continuity in curriculum. So we, after looking at that and looking, the next thing I just want to share with you, because I think it's important for any decision we make, is where are the kids coming at high school? So Edgewood Middle School has about 50 students coming, and your eighth grade is about 200 kids?
As of today, yeah, a little over 200 pre-enrolled.
So again, only 25% of the kids who leave the middle school are opting to stay there. Holland Crest only has 10 students coming. And as you can see by these numbers, the majority of the kids are coming from San Jose and out of district, and that's what our numbers show right now. So we tried to look for a hybrid in terms of if 712 would have so many changes to the district, is there another way we could keep the continuity of one school with one principal and two faculties, and that's when we came to you with our recommendation of a 6-12, but having an upper school and a lower school so we could maintain the middle school as a middle school, although it would be one school and one principal, and it would still give kids the option between having a lower grade and an upper grade that they could still make a decision at the end of eighth grade where they want to go to high school, and so they would not have to make that decision when they enter the school. And we felt that this supported student achievement, parent choice, feeding patterns, allowing students to enter the high school at ninth grade, minimizing the status quo, keeping the status quo for the middle school students, providing flexibility of course options, and the continuity of curriculum instruction. And at that meeting, if you recall, we had a lot of conversation, and it was a lot of information for us to give you at one time. But we left the meeting really feeling that there was not consensus from the Board of Education that this was something that every board member or even a majority of the board member was able to approve at that time. And at that meeting, you as a board asked us to do a little bit more research. And you asked us to with the next one. Do a survey that some of you had informal survey of sixth grade parents and their options, so you asked us to do a more formal survey. You asked us to look at the analysis or the impact of the new housing development at WIX, and you asked us to consider one other option that we had not considered in our committee was to have two schools, have one principal over the two schools, and then add an additional associate principal for the middle school so the duplications of things could be divided by two people, but we could keep the integrity and the intent of what was first when Edgewood Middle School and High School came together. So we did a survey. We had all of our principals do telephone calls to parents and really try to encourage parents to participate in this survey. But as you can see, we only had 59 parents who participated. We had 34 K-3 parents, and these were numbers because the numbers were, I didn't want to put percentages, 32 4-6 parents, 17 middle school parents, and 15 high school parents. And the results were that if we looked at the keeping what we already have, a K-6 and a 6-8, and parents were able to say what their first, second choice was, that 50 parents between first choice and second choice liked the flexibility that we have with K-6 and 6-8. When we asked them if they would like a K-6 and 7-8 only, which means that all sixth graders would stay at the elementary school, we had about 45 parents say that that was their first and second choice. When we asked if they wanted a K-5 and a 6-8, meaning sixth graders would only go to the middle school, 19 parents wanted that as their first choice. And when we asked the question about adding a 6-12, only 10 parents felt that that was something that they wanted as their first and second choice. I don't think we have enough numbers to really say that this is the way all of our parents feel, but I think it gives us a flavor for those who filled it out where they were coming from. Next, we did our own analysis, and I'm going to ask Mr. Seaman if I don't explain this correctly because he did the analysis of the new housing. And I think what we felt was the projection of 195 students coming into our district was based on using a percentage factor that is used by other districts. We didn't want to predict too high or too low. We were trying to look at what worked for us, so we took an average approach of just under 50% of the units having school-age children. And so with that in mind, we felt that the schools that would be affected would be West Cove, California, and Walnut Grove. And that if WIX did not happen and there was no new enrollment and we looked at the enrollment trends of these schools, that over the next, did we do 3 years or 5 years? Over the next 5 years, we would have to add a facility or a portable at West Cove and two at California. And with the WIX, now we might have to have two and three. So regardless of WIX or not, we're going to have to look at facilities or portables at these schools. It's going to happen much faster if there are predictions and analysis with WIX comes about. And we did not anticipate any facility needs at Walnut Grove, that we have room there for growth. So then we took into consideration the other option that was brought up at the Board of Education, which was the one principal, the one associate principal, and two facilities, and kind of liked it. We kind of looked at what our criteria was to support student achievement, ensure parent choice and flexibility, take into account feeding patterns, allow for new students to enter Edgewood High School at ninth grade, minimize the impact on student status quo for middle school students, provide flexibility for course options, and create continuity of curriculum instruction, that this would work if we had the same bell schedule. That if we could change our bell schedule and have both schools on the same bell schedule, that we could do a lot of the things that we thought we could do with the one school under this option. And so we're coming to you tonight. We feel like we need to make a decision, so we're actually coming to you with a asking you to make a decision tonight, and we're asking you to adopt this hybrid of one principal, one associate principal, and two faculties for our middle school, high school. Mr. Travatore, this is your school. Do you want to add anything to what I've said or clarify anything?
Well, I mean, not to be presumptuous or whatnot, but the clock is ticking. You know, we met in earnest with the task force, and we presented in February. It's now April. Obviously, the end of the school year is right around the corner. So we trust your judgment and guidance and whatnot, but, you know, we are looking for a decision if possible so we can move forward. This, if you will, I think would be a bridge. You know, from the feedback at the last board meeting, it seemed that some of you were kind of focusing on different issues and had different considerations and things like that. So I guess to provide relief, if you will, also to be a little bit more strategic next year and capitalize off some missed opportunities, we think this proposal here would kind of tide us over, if you will, until maybe there was more consensus on going another direction.
Questions? Okay.
Mr. Flowers? Mike? No?
Jessica?
I'm assuming where it says associate principal responsible for PTSA, school side council, ELAC. That's only going to be on the middle school side.
Yeah.
That you will continue to take the high school side as the overlying principal?
This is an original idea. 5 years ago, when we were kind of vetting out ideas for Edgewood Middle School, Edgewood High School, and Edgewood High, the rest of it, we visited Bellflower Unified, and both Bellflower High School and Middle School, or Middle School High School, and Mayfair as well, they're both 712s. And this is kind of the structure they operate under. There's a site principal, there's an associate principal that oversees the middle school, along with an assistant principal, and they have a counseling, they have two separate admin offices. So to help run the high school, the principal has assistant principals over there and counselors as well. So again, the associate principal essentially would assist with daily operations of the middle school. There's still one vision of the school. There's still one instructional leader, if you will, all of those pieces. But again, the daily operations would be largely facilitated by that associate principal at the middle school.
And why was the decision made that the associate principal would be at the middle school and not the high school?
We just talked with Mr. Travatore and felt that right now I'll let you speak to it, but the time that right now you're being pulled to the
even
high school.
In the example you gave, the associate principals were over the high school.
No, the associate principal was at the middle school.
Okay.
I'm sorry if I was unclear of that. So it's principal, associate principal for the middle school, and I think there's an assistant principal as well to help run the middle school and the counseling crew. And then, of course, the principal had two or three assistant principals to assist with the operations of the high school.
With having this with one principal, I think we could still have opportunities when we're developing a school site plan. When we looked at both site plans for the middle school, high school, they were developed very separately, but they had very similar goals. And so it would not stop us from maybe bringing the teams together at some point of that process and looking at our plans. So I think we could solve a lot of the problems that we anticipated would be solved under this new model.
School and the 7 through 12, we had the IB middle years. Why is that not listed under this one?
It could be. It's not having it listed didn't mean it couldn't happen. That was a mistake, really. I think when we were talking about limited enrichment opportunities, it had more to do with the after school kinds of opportunities, and it would be limited until we could bring staffs together to develop things. It could happen. It might take a little longer in terms of that. But we were just really looking at the enrichment and the after-school kinds of activities. under the same schedule, it doesn't mean it couldn't happen.
Well, that's what I was curious about, because I thought the main issue on those were the fact that we do not have the same schedule. And so by putting the same schedule in, I was surprised to see limited enrichment and intervention programs. Because, I mean, when you're on the same site, I would expect that you're able to collaborate and work together. We have West Cove and California, who are two different sites, two blocks away, that coordinate activities and events for students. And so, and I brought it up at the last meeting where we discussed this, that we, when we decided to move forward with the IB program, it was with the thought in place that we would really take full advantage of the program, and that would include starting to bring in the middle years. And so the hybrid meets, for me, what I was looking for, except for I want to know that we're on the same page, that that is something we're moving towards.
It should be listed there.
It will only help the students who decide to stay there in high school, and it may make some students move over to Edgewood to get into the program earlier.
Quite honestly, it wasn't left out on purpose.
Thank you. I appreciate all the work that went into this, and thank you for doing the survey and for circling back and coming up with some hybrid options. For me personally, I still, my heart is with the 7-12 configuration, and I know that it costs more money. I know that the portables will have to be at the elementary schools, but at all the open houses that I went to, and in asking parents who had sixth graders and asking parents who had prospective sixth graders, I didn't hear from a single parent that said they wanted their sixth grader at a middle at that configuration. Not a single one. Everybody felt that being back at the elementary school for sixth grade was the place to be. They felt that their student got more time to mature and develop. I even had one parent point out to me that her sixth grader was 10 years old when she started sixth grade, and there was no way she would feel comfortable with that. But everybody loved the idea once I finished asking, you know, in general, and then said, you know, we're thinking about this. Everybody loved the idea of the 7-12. They loved the idea that Edgewood would be embracing the IB program. How many parents did we speak to? Over 36?
Yes, every parent I asked, a kid, no one wanted the 6-12.
Yeah, even the kids, too.
Not a one.
So I'm conflicted here because I want to support what's going on at Edgewood. I love Edgewood. And I do want to, and I'm glad to hear that the IB curriculum, oh, I even asked at NSBA, the IB people, the representatives, I went to their booth specifically and talked to them for at least a good half an hour. And they also said that they do have an IB elementary curriculum that is K through 6. They said our middle years program was created 7-8, and then, of course, the high school program. And, of course, he said, you know, you can make it work at the sixth grade, you can tweak it, you can configure it, but the way we planned it was for 7-8. So I want to be supportive. I was happy to hear right now when you just said, Mr. Travatori, if this hybrid will hold us until we can eventually get consensus for maybe a 7-12 or a different plan, then maybe I'll vote in favor tonight with that hope, because I really think that the 7-12 is the way to go. I was already thinking Edgewood Preparatory in my head, calling it, embracing it, and I felt what a great new reconfigure opportunity we were going to have to reinvent Edgewood. So, but if it takes this reconfiguration to get consensus, then I'll vote for it. But I won't yet give up, maybe next year or the year after, to pursue the 7-12.
I just want to say we're not saying that the 7-12 wouldn't work, but it really is a major change in philosophy for our district. And I think if you're going to make that kind of a change, it really needs to be more than a consensus. You really need 5 people on the board to really support that, because as many people that you've talked to, there are going to be other people who aren't going to be as happy, because you would not be able to have, if you made that a feeding pattern, 7-12, then there would be parents going, but I don't want my child to go to the high school. And so there's a lot of things that would have to change in terms of our philosophy. And if that is the criteria that's important to the board, we certainly couldn't do it for next year.
Right.
But in my opinion, it takes all five people really committed to that and supporting that change.
I wrote here in the margin that I'd love to see the associate principal begin immediately with the new school year, but that I'd like to see the 2015-2016 to allow plenty of time to let the parents know, to let the kids know, to set up a very realistic expectation. And I love the idea of changing the philosophy here in the district. I think it's a great opportunity we have to embrace the IB program and to start it earlier and to be one faculty, to be one large ship moving in this direction. But that's my opinion. Like I said, I asked kids, I asked parents, I asked the IB people, I did research, so.
Okay, I'm done.
You sure?
I'm done.
All right. Ms. Shoemaker?
Well, and I just wanted to clarify. When we approved opening the IB High School, reopening Edgewood High School, as I stated at the last board meeting, the main concern was sixth graders on a campus with 12th graders. Those concerns were alleviated when we put the fence up between the two schools. And my concern with the 6th through 12th, when we were having one campus, is that we wouldn't have that division. Under this hybrid model, a model that I haven't had complaints from the community about, that I really don't like my sixth grader here. Yes, in an optimal world, if you're told 6th through 12 or 7th through 12, most parents are going to say 7th through 12. But it's been my experience in the district that as long as we keep a division, the community is fine with it. And in terms of changing the vision of the school, I don't think it's the best to change the vision of the school to where we change the abundance of options we give. And so instead of giving parents the opportunity to say, my sixth grader needs to be on a middle school campus, they're older than the elementary kids, they'll develop better there, we would be saying, all of you are staying at an elementary school level. That is not how I want to see this district go. I want to see the sister continue the way it has been, which is give as many options as we possibly can. If you want a 7-8, go there. If you want the big campus, go to Edgewood. If you want 6-8 traditional, go to Hollencrest. If you want K-5, pick the elementary school that has it. K-6, pick the elementary school that has it. Small high school, go to Edgewood. Big high school, go to West Covina High. Classroom doesn't work for you, go to Kava. So we have the options here, and I really do not want to see those limited.
I really appreciate all the work, and I'm going to vote for this tonight. If we were going to move to a 7-12, I would still like to be the two schools, but we would have to, in everything I've learned, you never change feeding patterns without at least a year of prep.
Absolutely.
That is not something
Absolutely.
That we would do immediately. You don't want to start putting relocatables on schools without a lot of forethought. And relocatables would go on our elementary schools. Every one of our elementary schools would get most of them would get relocatables. You said Orange Room doesn't have the room. Where would Vine put them? Vine is very impacted for space. So
we've looked at that. We can put it in Vine, but it's very expensive because you're also looking at the plumbing and electricity
right.
and all of that.
So there's all of that would have to be given a lot of thought. I really, from hearing from so many high school students, they really wanted to keep that personality. And we want people to want to go there. And until we have a real strong contingent of people wanting to go there every year, I don't think we should change that. We want them to have that strong identity. So I appreciate you hearing them also and asking for their feedback. The parents that I talk to are happy with their neighborhood school. If it's a K-6, they're happy with it being a K-6. If it's a K-5, that's what they're happy with. They want their child to go to their neighborhood school. So that was the configuration they were happy with. Because mostly because of their comfort zone of being close to home and their children being so young. And then, of course, they wanted their children to stay with their friends. You don't want, you know, if your child's, all of the fifth graders are moving to a middle school, they're not going to go to a sixth grade at another elementary school. They want to stay with their friends. So that was kind of the consensus, and it's hard to weigh what parents want when that's not real tangible option for a lot of parents, especially when transportation comes into it and they can't, they're not ready to let their sixth grader walk anywhere yet, you know, besides the closest middle school. So, you know, not to another elementary school. So it was almost, when talking to people, it was hard to get a reading on them because it really wasn't a viable option for some of them to be able to experience, although most of them would probably feel safer. And I know I did. I didn't want my sixth grader to be going to Edgewood. I was afraid. He made the transition beautifully. Mommy didn't.
Well, and if you talk to the kids, they are. The only thing I do want to say is we do have, not a lot, but we do have kids from Monta Vista who leave Monta Vista at fifth grade to go to Edgewood because they want the opportunities that the kids have there. So there are some parents making that decision.
And I know I talked to one of the parents that chose his sixth grader not to stay at California because he felt that he would have a more rigorous education and more options at Edgewood. And I don't know what the gifted and talented was, but the only place he was going to get something called honors was at Edgewood. So they moved their sixth grader so he could be in the honors program. So, and what you were saying is the outcomes weren't any different, but for that parent, having it labeled honors is what the track they wanted their child to start on in sixth grade.
Do you have anything? No?
I have one question. You say that you were looking to it, trying to make it a 7 through 12 later, maybe?
If that's the direction of the board. What I'm saying is if the board gives us the direction that they would like a 7-12, that we certainly could make that happen. Not overnight. I agree with Mrs. Polis that kids need, they already know where they're going to middle school and high school, but if that was the direction of the board and that was, I would prefer it being more than a consensus, I would prefer everybody agreeing with that.
And the only reason I bring that up because of that. Everyone that I've talked to, I've stopped people on the street in the grocery stores, and I've talked to them, and I have not heard one say they want that, but you guys are making me truly think about.
I think what's really hard, you know, when you're asking something hypothetical, it's one way to answer. But if we were going to say that all seventh graders who start Edgewood is going to graduate there, you would have a different group of parents coming to you and saying, well, I like the concept, but I want my child to go to West Covina High School. And if you're looking at the number of kids who are staying, I think we need to build that base where we have a majority of the kids going on to Edgewood High School, and then you can look at that and it makes more sense. But when you have only a quarter of the kids doing that, it doesn't make sense for right now. We're still building the reputation, and I think as we have these graduates and they're starting to get into these colleges and, you know, we still build the reputation of the high school, I don't think it's an option that you have to say never. I just don't think the timing is now.
Then I wonder, if we do this, the parents come back to us, say, you know what, we told you we didn't want that. You know, I am listening to the people out there in the streets that's talking to us, and the public is talking to us. This is what's on my conscience. I'm done.
I originally thought that the 7-12 program, and I talked extensively with Mark about that, that was the right kind of configuration. You'd gone to the other schools and looked at those, and you hear about that a lot. But quite honestly, the more and more that I looked at the literature that we've done, what our specific needs are, taking into consideration what Ms. Shoemaker said with respect to making alternatives available to parents, and the same type of thing that Mrs. Polis went through with her sixth grader, and so did I, and he adapted tremendously well. Mark may even remember that those days.
He's been here all 26
years. I was going to say, he's been around an awful long time. He doesn't have his anyway, but he was there. That's that first year that we opened that, and we had a lot of scared people going in, and it was the kids that took over and said, you know, and mine especially said, no, this is where I want to go. This is fine. And mommy and daddy had to grow up real, real fast. So I would like us ultimately to go back and consider this single unit, 612, go at it, go for it, done. It makes the most economic sense and do that. In the meantime, I'm fine with this program.
I do need you to do a formal vote.
Oh, the only thing I wanted to add, and I apologize that I wasn't in my comments and I thought I was done, was I did speak to a few parents, I want to say about half a dozen, who begrudgingly were sending their sixth grader to Edgewood, not because they didn't like the school, but that they realized from an older sibling that if they didn't send their child over to Edgewood, it was from Monta Vista and Merlinda, I spoke to parents in both campuses, that if they didn't send them at sixth grade, they couldn't get that honors track, and the older sibling was hurt by that. Because they could not get into the algebra as a seventh grader honors because they were coming in as a sixth grader. So the younger siblings, they said, had to come in. They were starting them, pulling them out. They were not going to participate in any of the promotion ceremonies and whatever was going to take place. And they felt so horribly about that for their own child. But they wanted to start them over at Edgewood so they could be on that honors track. Because they said currently the elementary doesn't create that preparation. They said, but if you could change that, I would, in a heartbeat, keep my sixth grader at elementary. So I just wanted to say that. And I hadn't even thought about that, hadn't even crossed my desk, but I'm glad to hear that at least the board sounds open to creating a single configuration at a later date. So,
well, I was going to say that argument won't be applicable with Common Core with the new math pathways. Well, my point being the accelerated math program won't apply in sixth grade anymore. Starting seventh grade will go compacted, and so the child could retain their enrollment at the K-6 and be fine with matriculating at seventh grade and not missing out on the compacted course offerings with Common Core starting seventh grade.
Thank you.
Thanks. Let's move on with this item. Is there a motion for this item?
I'll move it as presented.
Second. Been moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes 5-0. We have an information report next. Where'd you go? On the school board city council liaison meeting. I actually had brought this up, at least I think I was, because we briefly talked about this at the last board meeting.
Yeah.
We got to get some drops. Thank you.
Come back when you can stay longer. We're going to talk about the city council, school board city council liaison meeting. I was particularly interested in the SROs, and I was hoping that you could give us a little bit of background, Ms. Miranda Jimenez, on the on that program or on that.
Okay, when I went to the first subcommittee meeting in October, let me get my notes here. I had placed the SRO on the agenda to get a feel for where the city was, to bring it back up, because I know our school board had an interest. I knew we did not have an interest to fully fund it, but we wanted to get a gauge for the city. At that time in October, I was the issue was shut down. The issue was shut down, and we were told that it would not take place because it was low priority. They needed to increase policing of the staff they had. But with the new city council coming in, it's a priority for them. So they actually put it back on this agenda. They called the meeting earlier than when we normally have our meetings. We normally have them May and October. Actually, that's not normal, huh?
No.
Having them is unusual. Anyway, and the reason why the city called it earlier was because they were putting their budget together. So they wanted to get an idea of how they were going to configure their budget moving forward. So they then asked the districts that were present how interested they were, whether or not they wanted to move forward. Obviously, all of us sat there and said we could not speak on behalf of our districts, that we would be glad to take back information discuss with our districts, get a feel where they're at, and it was both West Covina and Covina Valley that were discussing it, that shared the most interest, because the other school districts felt they had the coverage they needed, Walnut and Roland. So that's why we placed it on the agenda. So we do have a meeting coming up in May, and they do want to at least hear from us, where are we? Is this something they should continue to pursue? Should they try to pursue some grant money? Should they let it go? Is this not something the district is interested in? So that's what they asked us, if we could go back to our districts and get a feel for, and then report back on our next meeting, which is May the 8th. So that's the background.
It never hurts to look for grant money.
That's what we told them, right?
Yes.
We told them
that if there's a grant out there that's going to fund this, I would be 100%, because that's how we funded them before, mm-hmm. is through grants. And then we partially funded it. This would be very hard for me to pay this whole thing for a I can't see in our budget where we can do this. If security was an issue, I would like to see, because we could actually have security people at each school, the three high schools, probably for what we would pay for one officer trying to split between those schools. The response time at first they told us would be 3 minutes to any one of our schools. When I asked that at the meeting, it sounded like we might need 5 minutes for them to get to one of our schools now. Mm-hmm. And so under that, if it's going to take longer response time, do we just need more training for our current staff? So what do we do for 5 minutes to secure the buildings, if that's what we need to do, to isolate a student that may be an issue? And I know that we do ongoing trainings. Is it enough? Do we need more? And I can see us getting resources for that, but I'm 100% behind getting grant to do this. And if we could have officer at every single school, if there was enough grant, high school and maybe part-time at our middle schools, I think they made a difference. I'd like to see that. So if there's grant money available, do we even have somebody could help partner with the city in writing those grants?
Is the West Covina department planning on putting any money into it also?
Oh, well, you know what they told us?
They would pay nothing.
They said that not only would they pay nothing, but Chris Chung said he wanted to also have us completely cover the cars and the gas and the cell phone. He said he wanted those things covered. And not only that, but that we would have to still pay for this position when we were not using it, because we said, well, during the summer and during our vacation time, we don't need the school resource officer. And basically it was, oh, well, too bad. So that was unfortunate, because they passed all the costs off. In speaking to some of the city council members.
Hang on just a
second. Oh, sorry.
Just a second.
They also said that we had, was it 3 or 5 years that we had to obligate ourselves to this position? So if our finances changed, we couldn't change our mind, because they did not want to have to lay off that person and then have to pay the expense for their unemployment.
Right. Did you have more?
I just look at the bottom line. It's just too much.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems that I had with this program is the program that was that we'd had before, the SRO program, it was an excellent program. It involved education, it involved some counseling, a little bit of enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was done with the DARE program at the same time. And that was fine. Shively and Ron, I forget his last name.
Mitchell.
Ron Mitchell, thank you. Were in the programs and did a great job, and that was fine. but it's that components of education and counseling and that. So it's not a safety security issue. There was an SRO at the school in Pittsburgh, I think, the other day. they can't be every place at every time and that sort of a thing. So the idea, you know, that if we believe that policing is good, then perhaps we ought to have our own police department role and has its own police department and does that. But it's prohibitively expensive. Instead of that, we've done this, security officers, security guards, security staff on the district classified employees. If the city wants to pay for us to do that, I'm happy to offer a place. We'll even set up a portable for them or something to that extent. Right?
We as a school board were given a memorandum from Christopher Chung, who's the city manager, and I would like this to be put onto the school district website because I think it's important that the community be aware of the $1 million cost that was given to the school district when we requested possibly having an SRO in our district. Ms. Miranda Jimenez has mentioned that, you know, the city is requesting that we pay for a cell phone, for the car, for the radio costs, even during the time when the officer isn't on duty with the school district. I would be curious, I guess, if we went forward with this to make sure that that car is kept at our lot, that cell phone is kept in our district and not used by the city. Another thing to point out is they would like us to pay the purse contribution. What it doesn't mention is that the city has not funded their retirement benefits the way they should. So the PERS benefit that we'd be paying would be for other officers that are retired now, not for just the officer that we're paying for here. So it's another way that the city would like the district to pay for their obligations. I'm disappointed that the city is not willing to meet us somewhere to help pay for the cost of this officer. After all, a priority of the city has been getting more officers on the street. The school district's willing to add at least one, so they would have a partial cost of an officer. I definitely will want to go forward with finding grants to possibly bring the officer back. But as my colleagues have stated, at this point, one thing I need to also point out is that the request from the city is that we pay for a top-level officer while they train a SRO. So instead of, since they need to hire an officer, finding somebody with SRO experience so the school district does not have to pay the top-tier officer $200,000 a year, they want us to pay for that training also. And so we just simply at this point cannot afford $200,000 a year for a police officer. Thankfully, we have excellent school security that will have to continue to keep our school safe as best as they can without the help of West Covina Police Department, or for 5 minutes until West Covina Police Department is able to get there.
Okay, so we've got pretty much a good direction as to where we're going to
okay.
go. The next item on the agenda is item.
Hang on, I just want to make sure I'm clear because this has to be reported back. Colleagues, what I'm hearing is that we'd like the city to find funding for it and that we would not want to spend more than, 50%?
None.
Toward an officer? None. Is it none or no more than 50%? Just to give them some parameters. I know this isn't a decision, but if they're looking at funding, then at least they know how much to look for. Right, wasn't it prior that we paid for it at 50% and then they paid or 40-60? What was it before?
I don't think we need to answer that at this point because the city has made it very clear that they're not interested in paying for a parental officer, that we are to pay 100%. So the direction from me is look for grants.
I'd like to have an offer, hear their offer, and then we'll go from there.
Okay, thank you, colleagues.
Item 9, is the LCAP update? Thank you.
Okay. Well, good evening, everybody. This has been a big topic of conversation that we've all been working on, and I'll take you through to the pieces so that you're up to speed on where we've been with the committees. As you know, the development of the LCAP is part of what's required. I know you've all been part of the presentations that we've had, both at your school board association meetings and with the public forum. So this is just a quick reiteration of that. We do have the conditions for learning is an area that we're required to provide information on in our LCAP. Our pupil outcomes is another area that we're required to provide information on in the area of LCAP. And the third area we're required to provide information on is in the areas of engagement. And underneath each of those slides, we list the eight state priorities. What I want to spend a little bit of time on is just letting you know about the different stakeholder engagement that we've had the opportunity to participate in and provide for our stakeholders. We took our stakeholder engagement back to 2011. In 2011, we started the strategic plan process. We went through that process through 2013. That was a major stakeholder participation moment for us and has really been a guiding force in the development of our LCAP. Also in 2013-14, our site action plans that were developed by our principals were based on that strategic plan, and then the superintendent roadshows that we did at all the sites to explain the strategic plan and the implementation of Common Core. During those meetings, we gathered a lot of feedback from the community, from the parents, and from the teachers on where they would like to see the district go with its new funding and its new programs. You all participated on February 27th with our public forum at Edgewood High School, and you were all aware of that. But in addition to those items, we've been meeting with our LCAP Advisory Council, our committee. We've met two times with them. We'll meet a third time next week, and the last time on May the 20th. We've been meeting with our DLAC, our District English Learner Advisory Committees, to go over the same information that we've provided at our LCAP advisory meetings. We've worked with our district administrative teams to go over this information. And then following the completion of the draft on 4/30, our site level administrative teams will review this draft of the LCAP with their individual school site councils and with their school site staffs. In addition, the LCAP will be posted on the district website for public comment before it is brought as part of the regulation for public hearing on 6/10. So you can see we've had a lot of input that we've been gathering. We will continue to gather, and we're rolling on towards the end of the LCAP development process. You're all quite familiar with the strategic plan, so I don't have to go over that. But as a school district, we have this guiding document. And now we're coming up with this new LCAP that is a requirement. And so it was very important as a school district to take the strategic plan and take the LCAP document and combine them together to give us the actionable pieces of the strategic plan. We reviewed the strategic plan with the LCAP Advisory Committee and at the public forum. We've reviewed this student achievement data, both the highlights and the challenges. And we've used the information that we've gathered from this data reviews as well as from the strategic plan to design the LCAP goals and the LCAP actions. We also use the survey data. These photographs are representative of the major themes that we saw with the survey data. You notice that there's a lot of technology pieces shown as part of the data themes. That was a major piece in the surveys that we collected. Parents in the community want more and more technology available to their students. Another piece with our picture there of the classroom with the instructor and all of the students is they want to see more professional development, but not just for teachers and district staff members. They want to see it also for parents and parent university programs. We've got the cap in the book there to represent the college and career ready information. They want to see more college and career ready opportunities for students as well as more information programs for parents, parent universities, families, AVID pieces, counseling, visits to the universities, as we heard shared tonight by the students. The little microscope there, that represents our STEM opportunities. We heard lots of comments in the surveys about having more science, technology, engineering kinds of pathways for students and having more access. And then we also heard about having more rewards, that's a little certificate,
and acknowledging improvement in academics and improvement in behaviors. They felt like we did a lot with acknowledging actual achievement in those areas, but if we were encouraging students to make gains, we should be acknowledging that more. And then finally, you see the teacher with the students, and one of the things that we heard a lot more for was instructional bilingual aid support. Mr. Plana mentioned the challenges that we see with acquiring language. That was something that was a major theme that the survey data gave us. As we started to look at what goals then did we need to develop in bridging those two documents together, the strategic plan and the goals and requirements at the LCAP, we looked at, as a committee, the two major goals that the strategic plan held forward and that the board adopted, which is all students will meet or exceed district, state, and federal accountability standards, and all students will graduate ready for college and career and life in a globally competitive economy. We felt that those two goals really were exemplars for where we were going as a district and could be the umbrellas that would hold the other goals that were very specific and very actionable to the data and to the actions laid out in the strategic plan. So tonight, what my job is to share these goals with you, because in your packets you have one of the numerous drafts that we've been putting together for the LCAP, and it's quickly becoming 40, 50, 60 pages long as you start putting in actions. So we wanted to gather some input before our next meeting with the advisory committee on your feelings with the goals. So what we've tried to do is group these goals into the three areas required by LCAP. The goals were developed, again, by looking at the data, looking at the survey information, looking at the strategic plan objectives and strategic focus areas, and also looking at all of the strategic plan action pieces. So 2C is one of our conditions for learning. It has to do with our rigorous curriculum and really is the peer in the plan for our literacy and our writing strategic focus areas, if you were to look at our strategic plan. So we have 2C1, which is to provide a comprehensive, well-rounded, rigorous educational experience, and then also to provide the proficient writers. We feel that this C, 2C, supports goal 2 of the district, but the C is what promotes conditions for learning in our rigorous curriculum. You also see that we have 2D and 2E there for our conditions of learning, and those are to have a strong technology background, and then the science, technology, mathematics, and engineering. When you look at conditions of learning, if you go back to the 8 priorities, they all deal with things like facilities and curriculum and highly qualified teachers. And we felt like these goals really spoke to those conditions for learning. If you look at the next area that we have to address in the LCAP, you'll see pupil outcomes. And with pupil outcomes, we're required to look at student achievement goals. We have student achievement goals for our state and federal accountability systems for math and language arts. And what you'll notice in these accountability goals is we have goals for all students and for closing the achievement gap. And that was really important when we looked at our data, that we have all students achieving, but that we begin to narrow that gap for our targeted subgroups. Also, what you'll see is we have a very ambitious goal for our EL students. That seems to be a challenge area for us. It's one of the areas that the district is in program improvement for our Title III funding. And we have really good success with moving our students through learning language, but transitioning them to a reclassification or redesignation area into the 4 or 5 proficiency range has been a challenging area. They've been sort of hanging out at that level 3 area, and we want to help move them forward with that. And so that was decided by the committee to become a goal. Finally, in the area of engagement, in education we talk about engagement a lot of times as the cognitive pieces and the thinking pieces, but here what we're talking about is those participation pieces. And so these goals were written to support 1D, to support the parent ed piece. That was one of the pieces that we heard clearly from our community, and it's also a major piece that needs to be addressed in the LCAP. So we have a specific goal on parent engagement. We took all of the actionable items from the strategic plan that dealt with parent education and parent engagement and support, and those all become action items in the future underneath this goal. The foster youth piece, in the conversations that we've had, we have a goal here for foster youth. We felt that's really important. It's a major portion of the LCAP. This particular one, though, deals with the social-emotional supports for our foster youth students. The academic pieces are dealt with in all of the other areas, in the rigorous curriculum, in the academic achievement pieces. We felt like we also, though, for our foster youth, needed to address the other needs that they have, and so we have a specific goal for that. An area for West Covina Unified that is a challenge is, when you look at our data, is in our A through G requirements and our pass rate on the EAP. If we want our students to be college and career ready, and you heard tonight from our students to have options, we need to make sure that they have those options by being prepared to attend college if they choose, or being prepared by the courses that they choose to attend technical schools. Right now, that is not an area of strength for us, and we felt that that was a separate goal that we wanted to move forward with. And then finally, to decrease our suspension rates. I think we've been working on this for a while. We've made some great progress, and we want to continue to make great progress. And we felt that all of those areas really address the area of engagement for our students, and keeping them in school and keeping them interested in school and wanting to participate in school. So those are our major goals that we have. In your packet tonight on your table, you received a revised packet that looks like this. At the very top, it says Board Presentation 422. And essentially what this matrix is the format of the LCAP from the state template. I just share it with you because it is all the goals numerically, 1A through E and 2A through E. But also in addition to the goals, it shows the different metrics and how we will measure our attainment of these goals or achievement of these goals over the next 3 years. Without having our existing assessment system at our fingertips, some of these were challenges for us to come up with. But the committee has looked at these and feel that these are rigorous and also attainable. I just want to share really quickly, as you can see from our timeline in the other packet, we are pretty much approaching the April 30th mark, where we have to have our draft not only completed, but translated. So my department is working furiously to translate a document that is not yet finished and is over 50 pages long, so that when we post it, it can be posted in both English and Spanish on the website for the community. That needs the time to be reviewed in May, and then have the public hearing in June, and then hopefully will be adopted by the board. So my goal and our goal for tonight is to get feedback on those goals from the board before we move forward with writing the actions and things like that. Mrs. Kaplan, you have anything else?
No, it's been quite a process. We're taking it very seriously. There are some districts where their LCAP is 10 pages long, and the goals are very global. We felt that we wanted to do justice to our strategic plan, which really started a couple years ago. And I think you'll see more detail when we go to the actions that will be applied to each of these. I just want to give a big thank you to Colleen Hawkins, because she's really embraced this challenge of bringing it all together under one umbrella, and the hours of time that has gone into this, and meeting with people and talking to people and looking at the survey results. And we're really have a great committee working, very committed, passionate committee, and they'll be with us for a full day as we review different actions and into what this will look like in terms of what we're doing in our district.
Okay. Comments, questions?
I just have a few questions.
Sure.
Like getting parents involved. Like the young lady said, it's going to be hard. Thank you for all the hard work you've done. Just getting the parents involved, that's going to be a challenge in itself. Are you going to do it? Another thing, your public hearing, when would it be held at in June?
In June, it'll be held at the 6-10 hearing at the board meeting.
So you just want to just see if the people you hope you won't be?
That's typically how the public hearings go.
But how would you be able to set the goal and how you get the parents involved?
With the goal, how we're going to get the parents involved is we're going to start developing a parent university. That is a much larger process, and you'll see that through the action pieces to get more parents involved in the education and make it more of a unified, consistent offering across the district. As far as getting parents involved in the LCAP piece, part of the requirement of LCAP is that we present to our school site councils. So every principal is required to present this draft to their school site council to get parent feedback. Then we'll be posting it on the website from the 5th to the 23rd to offer for the public to offer feedback, and we'll do foam blasts and those sorts of things out there.
You get the parents involved, and I mean, they had the ROP thing when they had it after. Nobody came.
Right. Well, I think with the parent university piece, that's what we're looking at, is developing a program and working to have more parents come. If you look at the metric, the measurements that we'll use in this matrix for the parent university, some of it is just to establish the university as our first year goal, and then to sort of improve the offerings and improve the attendance over time over that first year metric. So at that point, we'll work with how we market it and how we get it out there.
Some concerns I have about foster youth.
Sure.
It talks about getting the foster parents information that they may not have. Are we going to track foster parents when they're students that were foster children, when they're reunified with their parents, will still have some of those issues? Are they would they still be eligible for those supports? Mm-hmm. And do we know children in our district who have been reunified with their parents but still have the issues?
Right.
Are we aware of that?
One of the things that is really challenging about this goal, this is a new subgroup that we have not normally collected data on. You see that some of the Title I background that I have, we've combined some of it with our homeless youth as well, okay, because we want to be able to serve that. And our foster youth is a very small population of our district, so we want to make sure that we're providing appropriate services to all the kids who would need that. This is an area that we haven't addressed before, and so that's why you see one of the first goals is to develop the committee and how we will track it and what we will do. And so part of this goal is to have this subcommittee that will develop all those policies and procedures and bring those things to you. I think the real intrinsic part of it is to provide those sorts of services to those kids over the long haul. It's not to be exclusive that once they're reunited, they're no longer able to receive services.
And I want to make sure that when they look at that plan, that all of a sudden when they're reunified,
right,
doesn't mean that they no longer need the mental health supports.
Right.
And oftentimes they change schools, so
right,
I would like to know if a student's coming in.
One of the reasons why we included the ILP kind of component to that is so that there would be some way for us to help schools track. It's even been suggested by some groups that in the future we might have like a community liaison as one of the actions. But not having the subcommittee yet to really start to put all of those pieces together, it's difficult to even write actions for that. So I think the spirit of it is to keep those services alive for kids.
Now, I know with IEPs and foster youth that if the foster parent, and most foster parents don't have educational rights, mm-hmm, that they aren't participants in an IEP. In an ILP, it doesn't have the same legal ramifications, but can a foster parent participate in an ILP?
I would have to say I'm not sure. This is one of the areas that we're looking into as we develop our plan for this, so that we can do this. I believe right now, because it's not the legal document, it's sort of a self-created document, we would still have those conversations and provide lists and services and those sorts of things to the parents without stepping outside of the bounds too far.
And I know foster parents cannot give permission for mental health services. So either the biological parent or the court would have to give that. So it almost seems like a built-in liaison is going to have to be there, because you're saying mental health is really the only extra service you're going to give foster youth, you know, with the identified. Well, if they're going to receive it in a timely manner,
right,
there has to be somebody
who can sign that paperwork for them to even get the ball rolling, for them to get those services.
Right. And we need to examine, in working with county social workers and the different people involved in those areas, what would that look like? As Mrs. Kaplan mentioned, many of our colleagues in other districts have sort of taken a more global look at those kinds of goals. We felt that this was an area that was important to the board. It was important to us as a district to provide these services. And so we're boldly launching into this new area, trying to make sure that we provide all those things, we meet all those legal requirements, and yet we still do the good work for the students.
Well, and I appreciate that. And since the state recognizes them as a group that's underserved, mm-hmm. and they were written in, I feel that we are doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. Because we want to make sure that they have equal access to education.
Yes.
And that they can graduate and be successful citizens.
Right. Part of the ILP development won't only be the social-emotional, though. It will also be the tracking of the academic.
Right.
But the goals in the academic pieces aren't specific just to a foster youth student, because they would be to a student who's struggling with reading. We felt like there were other areas that foster youth needed besides that. So the academic pieces will also be part of the ILP.
Well, and I assume that. I just want to make sure that the foster parent has access to that, because they're going to be implementing the homework, and they'll be the ones telling you, this is what I... how they're struggling, this is the assistance I might need before or after school.
Well, we're also, I think if you've noticed in some of the actions, looking also at the parent support groups and making that a tight part of the parent university or the parent support goal component as well. So some of these, you know, in trying to make sure that we track all of the things and we have all of the pieces, we're trying to be very restrictive in what we have, but we're also trying to make sure that we have the overlap that's required to support the community.
Well, and those were the only things, because I had gone through your whole document, that I had circled, because all of the other things I could see that were measurable, and because I've been involved with IEP so long, I'd like to see that it's measurable, and I could really see how you were at least trying to get that done in a time where there's no testing. So I appreciate that, because I could see a lot of work did go into that.
It's been a wonderful process. Lots and lots of people on the committee. Everything that we do, we vet through the administrative team. We vet through teacher teams. We talk about it at curriculum development teams. It's really been a group effort, and compiling all that information has been really fun. So thank you.
Thank you. This has been a lot of work, and thank you. I know when the LCAP was first introduced in the LCFF, I know Ms. Kaplan and I had conversations and said, we're ahead of the game. We have a strategic plan. We're going to be okay. We can swim through these waters. So thank you for connecting those dots for us here. I have two things. The first is I want to be able to take back to ROP. I was told by Ms. Kim Case that she provided to every single school district that our East San Gabriel Valley ROP serves how the San Gabriel Valley ROP will meet the career-ready component of the LCAP. Was that helpful? Is the LCAP committee using that information? I think she said it was a number of pages, and it was very extensive.
The LCAP committee will begin working more specifically on the actions at this next meeting. So they'll go through those pieces, and that's why you have the draft. Tonight's goal was, because it's such an extensive document, to sort of get advice from the board on the goals.
Okay. When you do, that way I can provide the feedback to the group, because again, our group is ahead of most of the other districts, so I want to be able to provide feedback to the ROP that it was helpful, that it was useful in developing our goals and figuring out the specific action plans, or no, it wasn't helpful, and maybe ROP needs to rethink how they go through it again. That would be great. The second thing that I wanted to ask was, what I didn't see, and I apologize, please point me in the right direction, in meeting the goals, I know that CSBA had advised us that moving forward with now the LCAP money, being that we have, with the LCFF money, now that we have more flexibility, tying in teacher raises to each of our goals and our places that we are trying to achieve, that tying that in so that you can go back and say, see, we made an investment here, and this was great. And so I know we had talked about it, and I I can't remember if I've talked to maybe some of my board members from that training. Is that something that we're going to do or not do? Or
I think that's hard to answer while we're in the middle of negotiations, and so I'd like to defer that.
Okay. Well, I thought that was very great advice that CSBA had given us a few times over. You'll probably hear it again, Cammie, in May. One more time, they'll say connect, especially since you do have teachers in the room and you do have parents in the room, connect some of your increases. A very simplified example that they gave us is if your district has high turnover and so you want to give significant raises in your district so that you can keep teacher turnover at a very minimum, that will improve student achievement. So they were saying, you know, tie it in that way. So, okay, that was... that was the only thing I wanted. Those were my two. Thank you. You did great, great work.
So if there's no other changes on the goals, then we'll go forward with those.
Yeah.
Okay. We're waiting in anxious anticipation for the next item on the agenda, quite honestly.
Oh, good. I'll let him do that.
You stand up for it, Mr. Seaman.
I need both of them. On the agenda.
Yeah, we're on item number 13, information report regarding Williams Valenzuela KC lawsuit settlement for the third quarter report of complaints and resolutions. We'll hear from district staff a report to report the information
of
Williams Valenzuela KC lawsuit settlement.
And no, I don't have a PowerPoint, but I am happy to announce that we have no complaints for the third quarter. I've thought about doing that, but Cabinet's always talked me out of it.
Seems to be wide open on that one, Bill.
Yeah, me too.
Any other Board of Education discussion? All right.
I just wanted to say one thing. I'm just so grateful that we're having the alcohol awareness at the high school, so to help prevent them and let them know the dangers. And I know we've had it for years, but it was sad. I know that we had the accident on Merced, and several of our students were involved, our graduated students were involved in that accident, and alcohol was related. And to see them, they were my son's age, at my son's school, and to see them like that was heartbreaking. And so I'm so glad that my niece gets to see the impact on that when it's really not hurting somebody, but think about what it does. And it didn't change these young men's life, but I'm hoping that it changed others, because this accident definitely changed a lot of lives. Or not a life, but I mean, several people's lives. And the young man is facing 7 years of being incarcerated. He was a graduate from our school, and it just really saddens me that it happened to him and to the people that he injured as a result, and their families, and all the families that are suffering. So I'm just so grateful that our administrators took it upon themselves to add that to this program at Edgewood. It just means even more to me after this.
Thank you. Please take note of the various open houses. Next Board of Education meeting is May 13th. And with that, we are adjourned at
9:50.
<9:50. laughs>